This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel Sensei at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of ZCNYC. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome. Sangha, friends, family, thank you for coming, loved ones. Usually on Sunday, for those of you who are new, is a talk given by teacher or a senior student. And today we will be doing a Jukai ceremony. Three people will be receiving the precepts. And Jukai is made up of two characters. Ju means, J-U, receiving or granting or to open space within the core of our being to what is natural and true. So it's making a space in which the precepts can manifest as what is natural. Ju opens to what is. And Kai is the precepts, the moral and ethical teachings of the Zen tradition. They point us toward naturally acting for the benefit of all beings. The way of the precepts is the way of going beyond the dream of self. It is the path that reveals the truth that our happiness and well-being is intimately connected to everyone's. The person next to you, to every being in this world upon worlds. From the very beginning, Buddha made clear not only is morality an essential part of the Eightfold Path of liberation, but we are intrinsically moral beings. The moral aspect of our being is way down in our body. We know how to act. And we can experience the world in terms of what is skillful and what is unskillful, what is destructive, binding, negating of life, and we can experience what is affirming. We can act in ways that are life-giving, positive, and generous, for all that is life. And when we practice, we are able to see what is binding, and the one who binds, it takes someone to bind us. What has never been bound, and what then is beneficial towards the path of liberation. From the onset, a very clear establishment of moral teachings and practices are part of our tradition. So these have come down to us in a particular form of precepts that I'll be giving to three of my students today. They are not taken, but they are given and received, and they are requested by the students. The precepts were created to function in the relative world, in the world of this and that, in the world of good and evil. They are at the base, the definition of the way a Buddha, a realized selfless being, lives in a world of differences with care until we realize that unification within our differences. And a bodhisattva is a person on the path to enlightenment who is dedicating their life to the well-being of themselves and to others, that this is the driving force in one's life, the path of radiance. So how do we do this? Most of us do want to live lives that are good and meaningful, with happiness, down to the smallest creature. And we want to have a beneficial effect on others. We live in a world that is in distress, as we all know. So what do we do as practitioners of this Buddha Dharma, as living beings in this world as being fully human. This ceremony today is a passage for these students. It's a first for them. It's a first for me as well. It's recognizing their practice up to this point, and in the continuation of the practice, it is the beginning of something new. And the precepts are based in wisdom and the enlightenment of the Buddha and of all enlightened beings. This has a wide embodiment, not always what we hear of, but it's getting wider. All kinds of beings have been enlightened. They are based in selflessness. The fundamental nature of all things is without an abiding, permanent self. Rather than this leading to indifference or not caring or an attitude that nothing matters, which we know is another way we construct things, this realization makes an imperative of living a compassionate life, makes most important all that is life. So there are the precepts themselves, and then there are vows, making vows. We may each have made vows in our life, and you know the power of them. You know the power of shifting vows to new vows. Vows of the precepts are what each recipient makes to these specific teachings. These practices as a way of being guided in our harmonious way of being. That's what the precepts are, and how to be in harmony with all that is. A vow is a very live bundle of energy, focused energy, a force of deep commitment to see something through no matter the obstacles. That's why we make them, because there will be obstacles, so we can return to a vow. That's what makes them so powerful. I vow. And so we know what to turn back to when something arises that's difficult, and be able to see that and recognize that within ourself. They speak to something larger, and they ask us to continually return over and over and over again. As many of us know, look at the vows you've made and how you've had to return to them over and over when they get tested. Is something we want to live by. So we need to also get our whole embodiment behind it, not just with the head, but with our whole being, our whole body, put into this vow and let it entwine us to the teaching. Then it becomes our path. And we have to let our life impact us as well. So we have to see what our actions do and let that impact us, so that we can also strengthen the vow. So it's not keeping anything out. All in the spirit of self-study is helpful and usable. The real strength will then emerge from our own unique life and circumstances. So these students have been practicing collectively for some years. We ask that a person is a formal student and has been practicing a few years, so they can both feel the direction of their practice, that they can meet obstacles and see they're actually going to stay in and keep practicing. It's a way to deepen the teacher-student relationship. Seeing each other in our lives, we practice together, and that's important. Because we need to pull back all the ways we project onto others that someone's going to save us and that we're taking our own responsibility. So we have to do that with each other and experience that. So each student brings himself to these precepts, asks to receive them as vows, so that they are each taking full responsibility for this turn in their path. And now the Jisha will bring them forward. And I'll be walking you through the ceremony both so you can understand what the parts are, and it'll help you be part of it, because you, in the Zen tradition, we're not visitors, we're all participants. And they'll begin with three sets of bows. The first set of bows is to the Buddha, symbolized by the image behind me, to acknowledge our original teacher, Shakyamuni. The Buddha and the self become one reality, just like when we bow to each other in the Zendo. To raise the Bodhi mind, identify, having awoken, to recognize our interdependency, that none of us lives on our own, none of us has arrived here on our own. We need each other. The second set of bows will be to their parents, bowing in the direction where they live or are buried, or to them if they're here in the Sendo. This bow is acknowledging our and identifying with our blood lineage, our family, our own genetic lineage, back through successive generations, as well as back to the Buddha, all who have given us the gift of this human life coming together. So this is gratitude for our genetic ancestry. It's a simple recognition that we have received, we are receiving, we have each been clothed and fed, nourished. And so we need to bring this up very close, to know deep within our own body and mind, to express it so it's not abstract or distant. And the third set of bows will be to Kaishi, the precepts teacher, which today is myself, representing the lineage of ancestors, the 83rd from Shakyamuni Buddha, generation to generation, down to this time and this place. With these bows done with an open heart and an open mind, we can feel that sense of identity. And we want to make it the most beneficial influence, and to really know that we will get tangled up in each other's lives, so to make it a really good tangle. And that's it said that the only thing that is transmitted is entanglements, so we can be free. Next, we'll do the invocation of the three treasures, the Buddha, the Dharma, and Sangha, the essence of the path of Buddhist practice of your body and mind. So what is invocation and how is it done? So the body language for this is you'll be on your knees in Chokhe, hands in Gassho, the expression of being non-dual, placing ourselves, yourselves, in the body of a Buddha. This affects our state of consciousness. And then we take in right speech, Namu, being one with, Namu, being one with. So we invoke, we prepare the space, we invite Namu to be one with. Everybody, please, Gassho. I'll do this twice in Japanese in recognition of our lineage, and once in English. Namo jipo butsu namo jipo ho namo jipo so namo hanchi shakyamuni butsu namo daizu hai hi kyu ku kanzeon bo so namo kanju fugen bo sa namo daishin nanju shri bo sa namo kosho joyo daishi namo taiso josai daishi namo riki dai so shi bo sa tsu. Be one with the Buddha and the Ten Directions. Be one with the Dharma and the Ten Directions. Be one with the Sangha and the Ten Directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great holy Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyo Daishi. Be one with Taiso Josai Daishi. Be one with the great successive ancestors. Namo jipo butsu namo jipo ho namo jipo so namo hanchi shakyamuni butsu namo daizu dai hai kyuku kanze on bosa namo kanjin fugen bosa namo daishin manjushri bosa namo koso joyo daishi namo taisu josai daishi namo riki dai so shi. Bodhisattva. So we invoke the Buddha, Shakyamuni. We take refuge in his enlightenment, in his example, the fact of his human life, where he devoted most of his life, the entirety of life, of his life, to be able for us to be here today. Also to our Buddha nature, the realization of who we are truly. We invoke self-nature of the Buddha and the enlightened beings, boundless and historical. We invoke the Dharma, which is the teachings of the Buddha regarding our identity with all things. While the Dharmas are always present in every moment, in everything, we invoke them to make them more present, more real, here now. The Dharma of all things, the real nature of all things, here in this hall. And we invoke the Sangha, the treasure that is around you right now, the community of practitioners, the treasure of harmony. Since all beings have Buddha nature for us, all beings are Sangha, past, present, and future. Our lives are dedicated to those we meet, those we have met, and those that we will meet and have never met, those we practice with, our companions on the path. Sangha is critical because it can reflect the things we're missing, that we're bypassing. Sangha is the space where we are rubbing into each other, where we're coming into contact, and through that, there may be conflict. The conflict isn't the usual normal conflict. It isn't worldly conflict, because we enter and center in sacred. We're in sacred, beloved community, and we have a different obligation, a different responsibility. We see our interactions pointing back to us, to things we need to look at more closely. We're being reminded to practice patience, kindness, and most important, vulnerability. So now we'll do the Gatha of Atonement, which is about our karma. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, now I atone, now I'm at one, now I'm not separate from it all. So it could be called the Gatha of non-separation. It initiates a state of mind that allows us to enter a rite of passage, such as this, to different realms, relationships, and states of being. A mind open and receptive to a shift. In living an enlightened life, a compassionate life, we have to face that which is not compassionate. In trying to bring forth generosity and compassion and wisdom, we have to acknowledge our own greed, anger, and ignorance. We have to face it within ourselves, within others, within our world. Otherwise, we won't be able to live these vows if we don't acknowledge that first. How do we do this, particularly with our own hurtful actions, past and present, in such a way that we can take full responsibility? That is this Gatha of Atonement. That as we live into these vows, that you continue to address any effects of your actions and find how it is to move forward unencumbered. Then we can continue to practice a life of non-attachment. We cannot undo the past. We cannot undo what has happened. But we can say, yes, it has. Yes, it has. Yes, this has happened. And now. The Gatha Atonement is an essential practice for us to be able to do this. Take the next step. It is a way to recognize our karma, the actions we take based on intention, particularly the harmful karma we create that arises because of our various states of consciousness. When we are grasping, fearful, full of pride and jealousy, it's a long list of activations created by our thoughts, words, and bodily actions. It's not abstract or philosophical. It's what we think, say, and do in every moment. Now I atone for it all. I take responsibility. I'm not separate. Regardless of the circumstances, which can at times be quite hard, quite adverse, counterintuitive even, doesn't feel in alignment with your intuition. It makes us very difficult to live these vows fully. My actions belong to me. Your actions belong to you. That's what we're taking responsibility for. I am the inheritor of my actions. In this way, we are empowered to address them, to learn from them, to develop, and step forward. So this you can echo with the Eno, the liturgist. Everybody, please, Gassho. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
All evil karma ever committed by me
on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Now I atone for it all.
Now I atone for it all.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Now I atone for it all.
Now I atone for it all.
Next we'll do Shasui, which is the asperging. And this is done with mountain water, right from our tap. Into the city water from the inner sanctum of the mountain, the womb of the mountain, and a pine sprig from Brooklyn, perhaps. This is not a purification ceremony because everything is already pure and undefiled. It's acknowledging that purity, mind to mind, generation to generation. It's a good head. They're all good. So now we'll take refuge in the three treasures. And this is the beginning of receiving the precepts. We invoke the three treasures within the bowl of this ceremony. Now you will receive and take refuge vows within them. Without the three treasures, it's not the Buddha Dharma, it's not the Buddhist path. Buddha Dharma is a path to awakening, seeing, and realizing in one's own body and mind the Buddha nature. It's what we already are. It's already who everyone in this room is. Yet, it's not something we can possess or grasp. It has to be realized and seen for oneself. It's the very nature of all beings. Every aspect of this body and mind is not separate from anything or anybody. And that is seen and realized. That's what the Buddha saw and passed on. All sentient beings, this great earth and I at once, have attained the way. Is what he was pointing to. It's all awakened nature and this magical display at the same time. All beings, all things are one essence. We can't possess it. We can't even get hold of it. It's boundless. It's not a thing, and yet it's everything. Kie, that we'll be chanting, Kie, Kie Bukyo, Kie Sokyo, Kie Hokyo, refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, Hokyo, Sangha, Dharma, is to unreservedly throw yourself into, rely upon this completely, these three treasures, saying, remember who you are. At all times. So taking refuge is our ongoing practice. We take refuge in this particular ancient way and also by how we live our lives. That's how we take refuge. This non-possessiveness of the three treasures of these precepts of everything is of particular importance. It is being in alignment with reality. A path of non-attachment. And because it helps protect us from self-righteousness. We talked about this in our sessions, that these precepts are not fixed. They're guidelines. There's different perspectives, different ways to see them. Whenever we're dealing with moral and ethical teachings, moral precepts, there's always this possibility of becoming self-righteous. In that, we become dangerous. We don't have to look far to see this in our world. Refuge is whole body and mind commitment to a unified mind, not separate. So, everybody, please gassho. And you'll repeat after, there'll be a call and response in English. Namo ke e butsu, namo ke e ho, namo ke e so, ke e butsu mujo san, ke e ho ruan san, ke e so wego san, ke e bukyo, ke e hokyo, ke o sokyo. I take refuge in the Buddha.
I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the
Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha.
Namo ke e butsu, namo ke e ho, namo ke e so, ke e butsu mujo san, ke e ho ruan san, ke e so wego san, ke e bukyo, ke e ko hokyo, ke e so kyo. Will you maintain these three treasures? On bow. So the first three precepts we just took, taking refuge, acknowledges your intention to stand open and exposed, finding your resting place, and taking your stand as a human being in the three naked truths of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Having atoned, taken refuge, you are now open to receive your life. And the next we'll take the three pure precepts, which is refraining from all action that creates attachments, making every effort to live awake and in truth, and living for the benefit of all beings. Sometimes the three pure precepts are known as the three root precepts and are the basis of Buddhist morality. These pure precepts help us to understand how the human realm functions when it's in the light, when it dispels the darkness of ignorance. How does an enlightened being experience the world? How does one's heart turn towards the day? And these precepts, in one sense, sound very simple. Everyone can understand them, because we are this being. I can say for sure that you will spend the rest of your days examining them, practicing them, and realizing them, that they will never be fatigued, though you may be. And then you just take another step and you start again. We're always beginning again. Just look at your day, how many precepts you can see you have broken in some way or another. Just waking up, yelling at someone, whatever. So there'll be the three pure precepts are, I will not create evil or harm. I will practice good, and I will actualize good for others. And I will read Dogen's commentary at the end of each. just as my teacher did for me. We spoke about in our sessions that these precepts are not fixed rules, and that there were several ways of understanding them. One is literally, in all times, in all situations, don't do it. Don't kill. Don't tell the truth. Don't lie. Just literally, don't do it. But if we affix to that as a rule, then we become dead. We're not attentive to the moment, and we won't see that there are certain situations in which to do that, as we discuss, would actually be harmful. The second perspective is out of compassion and reverence for life, the Mahayana understanding perspective, when it might be necessary not to be truthful, to kill, only to do it for that reason. And in that way, we actually maintain the precept. So you see how these can be tricky. In that way, we need to be clear that what we are doing that is only for that purpose and not to let ourselves off the hook. And then there's the one mind perspective. Knowing nothing to kill, no one to do the killing, nothing to be killed. So the Inchoke Gassho, please. The first of the three pure precepts is do not create evil, do not create harm. This helps us to understand that there is no harm or evil that exists in the world on its own. There is only force, no entity, no being that is this. That's the karmic force of our actions. The source of our harm is our mind, our consciousness, our attachments, our desires, our false views. We are the creators of all that is harmful, which is good to know, because this means we are in an excellent position not to create harm. This is most important. It's the first precept because it's an essential precept. This is where it all begins, not to create harm. Everything flows from this. Dogen said, "This is the abiding place of all Buddhas. It is the very source of all Buddhas. Do not create evil. Will you maintain this?" The second pure precept is to practice good. Good is this way too. It just doesn't exist in the world. We can think that the world is a place that is good, that the world is a beneficent place, but that's our mind bringing a value to the world. Good itself has no inherent existence. The sense of good depends on everything, so this too is good to recognize. It means we can bring this forward. This is the realm in which we live, and practice is all about this. Practicing good is to bring forth just that. And practicing good intentionally gives you no object, no time, no place, which is really saying every time, every place, every object, every place, practice good. Dogen says, it's the Dharma of Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, complete, unexcelled enlightenment. Practice good. Will you maintain this?
I vow to practice good.
And this third pure precept is to actualize good for others, to ensure that the good that we're practicing is directly affecting others, bringing benefit to their lives, helping to alleviate suffering. We vow to actualize good for others. So intimately related, we need to feel that to what is seen and what is unseen. This is to transcend the profane and to be beyond the holy. This is to liberate oneself and others. Actualize good for others. Will you maintain this? And now we have the 10 grave precepts to show us, guide us in how to bring these pure precepts to life, how to go about practicing good for others, how we cease from harm. Vows become pointers directing us toward our natural propensity to take action out of love and concern. Yet within the human realm, what do we need to pay attention to? These are these grave precepts. What are things that have been seen to be universal in humans that cut across time, place, culture, periods and times of harmful actions? The grave precepts point us to those things that either because of the impact of one single action have had such effect that we should commit to not committing that action. Or because the actions are so subtle and so frequent, in that way seem so unassuming that we don't notice their impact in terms of how they create suffering for ourselves and others. So all of that, the whole of the precepts are pointing to that range of actions. Some gross, some very subtle. The grave precepts is more detailed as to how a bodhisattva lives the three pure precepts and how we take refuge. The first of the 10 grave precepts is to affirm life, not kill. This is based in the principle of non-harming, and it's recognizing that all of life is a result of karma and conditions. As such, it has its own place, own role to fulfill in this world of interdependence. To rob that life is to take away that opportunity, particularly within the human realm. Because with human consciousness, we have the potential to do so much good towards all of life. To not harm, to not kill, to affirm life is not just to recognize this, but to live within this. That everything perfectly covers the ground on which it stands, has its own fulfillment, its own virtue. This is also not about harboring the mind of killing, and it refers principally to life, but also to all forms of killing, taking the life away from anything. Dogen teaches, life is non-killing. The seed of Buddha grows continuously. Maintain the wisdom life of Buddha and do not kill life. Affirm life. Do not kill. Will you maintain this?
I vow to affirm life. I will not kill.
Ororoki is where we see this take place. Those of you that have done the meal, where we really acknowledge a place where we have to take life, to have life. The second grave precept is to be giving, not steal. Do not steal. This precept brings us to the mind of grasping, possessiveness. The nature of desire is to accumulate. While some desires can be very helpful, but in a mind, a grasping mind, it is never enough or too much. It's like the embodiment of a hungry ghost. And to steal, to take that which does not belong to us, is to strengthen and manifest the grasping mind. This precept points us to not seeking contentment in things, in superficial pleasures, in power, titles, positions, in all things that we want to have and possess. To not grasp within them. It brings forth the mind of generosity, the great magnanimity of a Buddha, cultivating a mind free of attachment, free of idea of insufficiency and not enough, that we are somehow not complete, to not seek things outside yourself. Dogen said, "The mind and externals are just thus. The gate of liberation is open. Be giving, do not steal. Will you maintain this?"
I vow to be giving, I will not steal.
The third pure precept is to honor the body. Do not misuse sexuality. We can think of this as honoring the person, the whole person. Honoring the being, the whole being. Your whole being. The person which is physical, mental, emotional, intellectual, historical, the whole person. Sexuality, as we know, is a very powerful force. Look inside. Look outside. It's everywhere. It is the form of life, the form of wanting to be, the creative force. In a sense, what is not sexual? Independent, interpenetrating. In the human realm, it has a very particular place within us. It has the force to bring us closer, creating intimacy, to express love, trust, and caring. It can also be destructive, like any great power. It can create deep wounds. It can heal deep wounds. It can separate our mind and body. It can bring together body-mind. This precept is about not separating ourselves from one another, from ourselves, to not objectify, to honor the whole person, and to cultivate trust and deep faith in ourselves and others. The three wheels, body, mouth, and thought, and mind, greed, anger, and delusion, are pure and clean. Nothing is desired. Go the same way as the Buddha. Honor the body. Do not misuse sexuality. Will you maintain this?
I have not to honor the body. I will not misuse sexuality.
And this precept, of course, applies to all of us, young or old, in an intimate relationship or not. The fourth grave precept is to manifest truth. Do not lie. Manifest truth. Do not lie. This is a very essential precept because our whole path is one of discovering and living within the true nature of things. The first of the Eightfold Path is right understanding, complete view. This is true. This precept is encouraging us to have the courage to be truthful, to face truth, to not turn away from what is real, but to turn towards it, to seek what is true, to want to live lightly and gracefully and straightforwardly. To live a life of deception is a life. To live a life without deception is to live a life without regret. It's to inquire what we are believing about ourselves or anything. This mind of inquiry is essential all through practice. Inquiry means taking care, means we care. And this sounds so much harder than it is so much harder than it sounds to manifest truth and to not lie. Dogen says, "The Dharma wheel unceasingly turns, and there is neither excess or incompleteness. Sweet dew permeates the universe. Gain the essence and realize the truth. Manifest truth. Do not lie. Will you maintain this?"
I vow to manifest truth. I will not lie.
A little louder. Fifth grave precept is to proceed clearly, not cloud the mind. When we practice and encounter the Buddha mind, the luminous mind, the radiant mind, then all of the ways, then we meet all of the ways in which we cloud it. Once we meet it, we see how we cloud it. The ways that had and seemed to bring us pleasure or entertainment or take us away from ourselves begin to dim in their pleasure, in their enchantment. The more we practice, the more we see that clouding the mind is less and less interesting, less compelling, actually painful, super painful. From a Buddhist perspective, the moment of cloudiness, such as with drink or drugs or social media, allows us to become lost to ourselves. And we can say things, do things that last long beyond the moment and that we regret and that cause harm. Who has not been in that place where our mind has been cloudy and in an instant all that we stand for, have integrity about, are dignified about, just seeps out in that moment. So it's really critical. From a Buddhist perspective, the moment of cloudiness recognizes that we put ourselves in a precarious circumstance internally in a moment of intoxication. It is also pointing to the fact that when we are seeking to cloud the mind, we are really seeking to turn away from something difficult. We have got the wrong spirit. Dogen says, "The mind is the originally pure and clear Buddha mind. Do not let it become cloudy. Do not be defiled. Proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind. Will you maintain this?"
I vow to proceed clearly. I will not cloud the mind.
As we practice this precept, and all the precepts, they transform our understanding. We begin to see that clouding the mind itself is an illusion. The mind is never cloudy. The mind is never cloudy. So we cloud the mind. Even with the mind of obstructions, a mind that would previously would have been obscured, that clarity no longer occurs. The sixth precept is to see the perfection. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Here's a precept that all of us fall into. And it's really, the key is, when necessary to speak of others' errors and faults, do so out of compassion. Do so because it's skillful. Do so without any enjoyment. That's the key for all of us. When we're speaking of others' errors and faults, see if you're enjoying yourself. That might indicate that you're kind of going off. In other words, without ill will, see their perfection. See the person, the Buddha. And then we see errors and faults just as that, without conflating the two. This is also a way of recognizing that as human beings, we are human beings, right? That's what we are. This idea of perfection is just that. It's an impossible idea. What would it look like? You tell me. I've tried hard myself. When we think in terms of absolutes, you're all good or all bad, your practice is perfect, or it's a hypocrisy, that is tyranny speaking. To recognize that we need to learn how to fall because falling occurs. We need to learn how to stand up because standing is necessary. Then we need to learn how to fall again and again and to be able to do that and to be free with our errors and faults so that we can allow others to be free with their errors and faults at the same time that we hold ourselves and others accountable. Dogen said, In the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we are the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, the same practice, not two. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Do not destroy the way. See the perfection. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Will you maintain this?
I have to see the perfection. I will not speak of others' errors and faults.
You can see how several of these precepts deal with speech, like three or four. So it has a strong karmic force. Here's another one we fall into. The seventh grade precept is to realize self and other as one, to not elevate the self and blame others. This touches on another way of using speech, which we are all familiar with, where we feel badly about ourselves, and so we find someone else to point out something about them to make us feel better. That's one way. It's very simple, it's very ordinary, and it's creating suffering. It seems easier to point outward than to take a good look at ourselves, thus the blame. When there's no self-clinging, when we're no longer seeking to be uplifted by praise, and we're no longer avoiding or are crushed by blame, then we can cease from seeking comfort and elevating the self and blaming others. We recognize in self and other as one that each person is complete, living with their causes and conditions, making their choices, taking responsibility to the degree that they do, and this is where we meet. We too are the same way. It also points to the fact that nothing we see in another does not exist within ourself. Take that one in. Nothing we see in another does not exist within ourselves. Everything we see in others exists within us. Different degrees, different expressions, but each of us is the universe, the same universe. In this sense, this is to stay on your seat. Dogen said, Buddhas and ancestors realized the absolute emptiness and realized the whole earth. When the great body is manifested, there is no outside or inside. When the Dharma body is manifested, there is not even an inch of earth upon which to stand. Realize self and others one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to realize self and others one. I will not elevate self, blame others.
The eighth grave precept is to give generously. Do not be withholding. To not steal is to not take what doesn't belong to us, the mind of acquisition and possessiveness. This is to have and to not want to release. To have something that could help someone, material or non-material, and not wanting to, feeling that somehow if we offer this, we will have less. It's really pointing to the mind of stinginess, of grasping. It recognizes that when we hold on, we've already lost what we wanted to preserve. When we let go, the world becomes abundant. We become more abundant, more expansive. In that way, as the Buddha said on many occasions, a blade of grass, a word, a gesture, an expression, a penny has the power to bridge a gap, to offer, to heal. This precept and all these precepts are about how to live that generous life, how to live that generously. One phrase, one verse, 10,000 forms, 100 grasses, one Dharma, one realization, all Buddhas, all ancestors, the universe itself. Since the beginning, there hasn't been anything to withhold. Give generously. Do not be withholding. Will you maintain this?
I vow to give generously. I will not be withholding.
The ninth grave precept is to actualize harmony. Do not be angry. Anger is one of the three poisons. It's a tremendous force. When it is not based in self-clinging, it has the power to do good. It can serve. It can heal. That fierceness that anger can bring forth can precipitate change. That can heal, that can awaken. But it also recognizes that more often it falls into the destructive realm. We have to be really awake to enter that realm of that precipitating change, be really clear. That's why for activism, to use that anger, why we go in the inner to go outer. So we can clear and let our anger serve to help, to heal. It helps us to examine our mind that is in conflict, the mind of dukkha, and to learn how to not be afraid of anger. First, how to be able to tolerate it within ourselves and others. Then, how within anger to manifest compassion. And this is most important. How to manifest compassion within anger itself. To recognize that accepting that which seems unacceptable is not passivity, but actually frees us to respond, to act, to practice. Anger can be a deep form of compassion for another, for the world, for the self, for the body, for a family, for all our ideals, all vulnerable, and all possibly about to be hurt. Stripped of the physical imprisonment and violent reaction, it may be a very pure form of care. The internal living flame of anger always illuminates that what we all belong to, what we wish to protect, and what we are willing to hazard ourselves for. What we usually call anger is only what is left of its essence, and then we're overwhelmed by it when it reaches our body's incapacity to hold it. So we need to be very aware right there. This precept is not saying don't ever be angry. It's more as don't indulge anger so that it will overwhelms us, so that it overwhelms you. Don't become lazy with anger. Understand the power of anger. Examine it, and when necessary, use it, but use it wisely. Dogen said, "It is not regressing. It is not advancing. It is not real. It is not unreal. There is an illuminated cloud ocean. There is an ornamented cloud ocean." So he's speaking right there of that non-duality of anger, the ornamented and the illuminated cloud ocean. Actualize harmony. Do not be angry. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize harmony. I will not be angry.
The tenth grave precept is to experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. So it takes us right back to the beginning. Beginning with taking refuge, invoking the three treasures, the last precept is to not defile the three treasures. To defile is we want to injure, to harm, to destroy. It is to place ourselves outside. We spoke earlier in the way about how when we make a commitment, a vow, then when there's difficulty or struggle, when we're angry, or when we want to criticize to effect a positive change, that we do so from within this vow. In other words, we do it from an intimate contact with that which we are criticizing. This is a very, very different thing. This is not to turn against your own home, your natural mind, to take refuge and practice the three treasures and to realize that they are life itself. They give you life. They give each of us life. And in that way, they give others life. To not defile them and therefore to experience the intimacy of things. Dogen says living the Dharma with the whole body and mind is the heart of wisdom and compassion. All virtues return to the ocean of reality from which they arise. Do not comment on these precepts, but practice them. In other words, don't turn them into abstractions in your mind. Embody them, practice them, make them real, actualize them. Experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. Will you maintain this?
I vow to experience the intimacy of things. I will not defile the three treasures.
These 16 precepts, the three treasures, the three pure precepts, and the 10 grave precepts were handed down from Shakyamuni Buddha to my teacher, to me. I give them to you. Will you maintain them well? Will you really maintain them well? Will you really maintain them well? Three bows. It's not too late.
I almost ran out the door.
The Buddha's robe, the lineage of ancestors. That's the male lineage. This is the female. We were there in the beginning. We were there. This is to certify that Jean Ann Wirtz, having fulfilled the precepts, training requirements of the Zen Mountain Monastery Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 12th day of January 2020 received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, lineage charts, Roksu, and has been given the Dharma name Oji Fuchio Hojin Preceptor. Three bows. Buddha's robe. Lineage of ancestors. It's called the Kechi Miyaku. The list of women ancestors. This is to certify that David Nelson, having fulfilled the precepts training requirements of the Zen Mountain Monastery Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 12th day of January 2020 received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, lineage charts, Roksu, and has been given the Dharma name Genwa, Fuchio Hojin, preceptor. Wow, it's a long one. The Buddha's robe. Kechi Miyaku, lineage of ancestors. The women's lineage of ancestors. This is to certify that Simon Harrison, having fulfilled the precepts training requirements of the Zen Mountain Monastery Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 12th day of January 2020 received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, lineage charts, Roksu, and has been given the Dharma name Sekku, Pucho Hojin, preceptor. Everybody please gassho. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. Now, usually we, at the monastery, we've done a walking bow, but here I'd like you to turn to your sangha and do your, and the sangha, if you would gassho and acknowledge their having received the precepts and your support. It's in the fire of the sangha that, and family, that we really get tested. The world. So let me say a little bit about your names. A Dharma name is a practice name. We talked about it some. Ways to develop, things that are developing. Jinan, your name is Oji. O means response, answering. It's the O of Orioki. The receiver's response to the offering of food. And it has the character of heart and mind in it. So it's answering, a response with a trusting, faithful heart, body, mind. G is to have love or compassion for. It also has the heart-mind character. So both of your characters are relying on a faith, heart, mind. The response with comes with an imperative of living a compassionate, loving life. It is to allow the response to arise from all that is good and loving and to strengthen this way of being. This means not to turn against your own home, your natural mind, and to take refuge and cultivate the ability to generate only love. It is understanding cause and effect and seeing things as they are true. And that can open our heart. It is trusting staying clear when things become unclear. This is the response of compassion. How is it to be compassionate to the sorrow and all you experience? This is sacred work. This is the positive response of lifting any misdirections close to your heart mind. It's the big yes that shakes the universe. When you keep discovering, revealing the true self to the self, when you love the true self as nothing whatsoever but everything, it is all. You go beyond the selfish and the unselfish, all merged together in love, pure and simple. Addressed to none, deemed to none, go deeper and deeper into this responsibility. Investigate yourself and love the investigation. You will know what to do from the very roots of your being, which is exactly love. OG, compassionate, loving response. And David, your name is Genwa. Gen is I. The eye that sees, the eye that can observe carefully, watch steadily, notice, recognize, witness. It's the gen of Shobogenzo, the treasure of true Dharma eye. The real treasure of the Dharma is not to be found in books, but in one's own Buddha nature, the ability to see this correct view of the treasure of Dharma is called the treasure of the correct eye. In a sense, it's what Daido called seeing with the unconditioned eye, not to latch onto thoughts about things through the eyes. The moment the mind occupies itself through the eyes, it thinks about what it is going to see, or any sense organ. And wa is harmony, peace. Being in accord with things and responding with a mind of appreciation for a life in balance, in your original state, which is harmonious and peaceful. We see Avalokiteshvara with her many hands, and each one has an eye in the center of the hand, which displays the skill to bring peace. The precepts are about living a life of harmony. Harmony in the Sangha treasure, this is brought about by knowing that no matter what a member of Sangha may do or say, they're complete just as you are. To let rest and experience the harmony, always present. And this turning towards harmony is like how a flower wants to get to the light. That's wa. So genwa, eye of peace and harmony. And Simon, your name is Sekku. Sek means to be close to be intimate with, touching, encounter face to face, summon, invite. And Ku is the character for sky, all expansive space, emptiness. It's the same character that appears in the Heart Sutra. Form is exactly emptiness, emptiness exactly form. Where all appearances arise but never become anything other than the sameness that is their source. Everything arises in emptiness, has this sky-like nature, and it is exactly form. It is our intellect and misunderstanding that tends to turn forms into concrete things, to reify them. We become limited. Cezanne once wrote, "If you want to understand reality, paint clouds." The true view is the moment every conceptual attitude dissolves. Ku is what unifies all things in their miraculous display of differences based in this sky-like nature. To always remember, not to. So Sekku, being intimate or touching sky-like nature. Emptiness. To bring this forth in actuality, you need to persevere, apply a lot of effort, and being effortless. Not doing anything at all is something we have to apply ourselves to. Touching the empty quality, the quality of sky beyond all constructs. Sekku. And in closing, these are words from Daido Roshi to you. When the true eye opens, everything is realized as one. When the Dharma eye opens, one is realized in everything. When the true eye functions, it clears away all discriminating thoughts and allows us to see the true Dharmakaya, the absolute nature of the universe. When this universe is hidden, everything is just as it is. When the Dharma eye functions, it creates a clarity that allows us to realize that nothing in this universe is hidden. Everything is just as it is, revealed. The true eye is the eye of wisdom, the diamond sword of Manjushri Bodhisattva, which cuts through all illusions. The Dharma eye is the eye of compassion, the unconditional love of Samantabhadra Avalokiteshvara, working for the alleviation of suffering. Everyone has these two eyes, as does the Buddha. When we open these two eyes, we realize Buddha mind. When we realize Buddha mind, we see for ourselves that true self nature and Buddha nature are not two, but one. This is the treasury of the true Dharma eye, Shobo Genzo. This Jukai ceremony commences a lifelong process, a confirmation of practice and commitment to a life of mindful inquiry into the motivations and consequences of your actions. As a result, we are less likely to take action that is hurtful to ourselves and others. More than simply an ethical system, the precepts open the heart and mind to the wisdom and compassion that lie deep within us all. And to remember that deep within us all. We do not take them or earn them. We receive precepts as a gift that acknowledges that although we may not always act in accordance with deep intelligence, it is at the core of who we are. And in the moment of that acceptance, and in each moment of our lives, Whenever we aspire toward action that manifests this intelligence, that is Jukai. So even though we gather for a ceremony where we invite our loved ones, I told you to dress in fresh, clean clothes, we recite certain words and so forth, the power of Jukai lies in the moment-to-moment, day-to-day Jukai we engage in all the joys and sorrows of living. And it's something you are perfectly suited to do. With these vows, your practice in life will change in ways that you will continue to unfold, that will continue to unfold and surprise you. So be prepared to be surprised and not be predictable. May they illuminate your life. May they illuminate the lives of others. May your lives go well.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject.